Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome back to another episode of Behind the Bets with Doug Kazarian, presented by DraftKings, America's top-rated sportsbook app. And we are putting a bow officially on the football season. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers are your Super Bowl champions, amazingly. In his 10th Super Bowl appearance, Tom Brady wins his 7th ring. Just a remarkable story when you figure out everything that happened. So Mr. Executive Director is going to be coming up momentarily. We're going to tie up all the loose ends on the props and all that stuff. We're actually going to talk, just to inform people about the Super Bowl streaker story and all that, just so people have an idea of what's allowed, what's legal in the States, things like that, a little context on that. And we have an official Bonanza winner. So Murray and I are going to discuss that. And then Matthew Holt, obviously somewhat regular here on the podcast, doing the next UFC card. We have a fight night this weekend here in Las Vegas. So Matthew's got a few plays. We'll also break down the main event with Usman, nearly a $3 favorite. The welterweight champ is in action there. And before we get into today's episode, I want to quickly remind you that KJZ is on ESPN Radio weekdays from 6 to 10 a.m. Eastern. This show brings you all the latest sports news on NFL offseason moves and what's happening with the NBA, with the insights of former Super Bowl champion Keyshawn Johnson, former Duke basketball star Jay Williams, and co-host Zubin Mehenti. KJZ is also available as a podcast after each show that you can find wherever you get your podcasts.
Kicking is for losers.
Time to get our own parade, because we have a champion in the Baby Bankroll Bonanza. The confetti's falling. You just can't see it at home. I edge out Mr. Executive Director, but also time to put a bow on the Super Bowl. And you know what? Kicking is technically for losers, because 3 field goals is all the Chiefs mustered.
Yeah, and we saw it. I think the game really ended when Andy Reid kicked a field goal at the beginning of the third quarter to cut it to 21-9. I might have tweeted something about that. And then Tampa Bay, I believe, subsequently scored a touchdown on the very next drive. And that was the game right there. I think the two biggest moments in that game had to be the touchdown that Tampa Bay got at the end of the first half, which was aided by Andy Reid calling timeout on 3rd and 1. Kept Tampa Bay's drive alive, really. Andy Reid called timeout. They get the first down. Long penalty gets them down into the red zone. They score a touchdown. And then Reid kicking that field goal right after halftime, I think that was it. That was it for Kansas City.
I was going ballistic on Twitter on the timeout, because ironically, I was behind the counter in the back room at the Westgate 2 years ago during the AFC Championship game when he did the exact same thing against Tom Brady. So literally on defense, he called a timeout, he completely botched the exact same situation. And frankly, Andy Reid, as much of a genius as he is with X and O's, is a clown when it comes to game management. It's ruined him over the years. Mahomes saved him a year ago, down 10 in the fourth quarter. Otherwise, we'd be really critical of Reid. So I love some of his in-game decisions in terms of offensive play calling, always willing to throw instead of just run, like we saw with his backup quarterback, 4th and 1 in the Browns game. But it's really disheartening to see these stupid decisions being made. But it is what it is. I'm curious. So Nevada Gaming came out. You guys won, you being the Nevada sports books. How much of that was futures? How much of that was on the game? Like, did you guys do really well in the game? Because I know there was a bunch of money on the Chiefs, but also props and stuff like that.
We did very well in the game itself. You know, we had a very high 6-figure win on the game. Sunday was great for us. You know, I think I even texted you on Saturday night that we got word that a very respected player was betting Tampa Bay. And we were very aggressive in the way we booked the game, moving the Kansas City number to -3 even money to induce money on the Chiefs. We had a guy came in right when we opened on Sunday morning. I was still getting dressed, and he asked for $325,000 on the Chiefs at -3 even money, which we took. And then another guy came in after I got into work, asked for $310,000 on the Chiefs -155 on the money line. We took that too. So we had some really big bets come in on Kansas City. Now, we gave back about a third of what we won on the game in the futures. We had a big liability on Tampa Bay in the future book. We also had a big liability on – we run this prop all season long, the AFC versus the NFC. And we had a big liability on the NFC because we thought the AFC was going to be a bigger favorite in the Super Bowl. So we did lose a lot of money on markets that we had going into the game Sunday. But on the stuff that we booked over the weekend and during the week, we did very well. We did very well on the props, as you can imagine. No touchdowns from Kansas City was certainly very good for us in the prop markets. And we did very well in the game itself. Not a small factor in that was the game going under, by the way. A lot of bets on the over. One guy bet 75,000 on the over. So a lot of big bets on the over. The game going under was huge.
All right, so good. So the house did really well. Win-win for the bad guys. No, in all seriousness, you guys put in a lot of work. It's interesting to kind of track how everything does and goes through. Now, some of the props that took big payouts were exactly 9 points for the Chiefs. That was 150-1 at Caesars William. I'm just going to quote the openers at Caesars. Obviously, things moved.
Sure.
No Mahomes touchdown, which is actually a prop I gave out Sunday morning on the show in terms of a long shot prop. I always like to give out one for the Super Bowl. I gave a bunch of scenarios how it could happen. And one of them was like, hey, the defense just smothers that offensive line that's banged up. You never know. I thought maybe they could lose 24-14, get two rushing touchdowns kind of thing, and just get dominated. I didn't think they'd be held out of the end zone entirely. Kansas City as a team, no touchdowns, 40-1. But the 15-1 also hit. So some crazy payouts. I actually did bet the 15-1. You guys were 6-1. So I just knew that 15-1 was a bad number.
We were talking about you on Sunday. Sunday, you know, we're in the back room, Ed Sammons and myself overseeing the grading of all the props and the booking of the in-game, all that stuff, all those good things. And Ed mentioned to me that you had taken 15-1 on no Mahomes touchdown pass. So what a great bet, honestly. Great bet.
Well, I mean, just, you know, we were very dismissive of that storyline. We knew the storyline of the O-line and the injury to Mahomes' toe, but we kind of dismissed it because the kid he's a wonder kid, right? He's overcome every sort of adverse. And frankly, he kind of did. He hit receivers in the face.
What more could he do? Tell me what more Patrick Mahomes could have done on Sunday, honestly.
But he threw balls that were like hitting guys like the first early of the game where Tyreek Hill, he hit in the face mask, and then he threw that one horizontal on a third or fourth down. So crazy stuff across the board. So what were some of the other props I missed that you guys had to pay out some of the long shots or whatever?
I highlighted a couple of them. I mean, the biggest ones were, you know, Gronkowski scoring the first touchdown. That was, I don't remember the exact price. That was really bad.
I know there was 18-1 at some point.
I think we might have been a little lower than that at the end because we took so much money on it. That's why I didn't want to quote a number, but it was in that range. And then the other one, we had a guy bet, he bet on Godwin to have exactly between 1 and 10 receiving yards at 50-1. And we were hoping that the Buccaneers would throw one more completion to Godwin there at the end of the game. But we did very well on those index props overall, but those were two that we did get snapped on. What really carried the day for us in the props, though, was Kansas City didn't score any touchdowns. So you've got all these Kansas City players. Will they score a touchdown? Yes, no. And it's just no, 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 no. You know, I mentioned on the show that we did before the game that we didn't really think Kansas City was going to have much success rushing the ball. They did, actually. They ran for 107 yards, but we booked it to need Chiefs no rushing touchdown, no first half rushing touchdown, and for the Buccaneers to have more rushing yards than the Chiefs. And we did very well on all those. Now, I wouldn't say that our handicap was great. You know, there's no way we thought the Chiefs were going to run for 107 yards, but we did manage to win all three of those props, and that was very good for us.
Something we talked about in the last pod, the kickoff thing. You guys were betting a lot of the touchbacks, yeah. And think I actually bet touchback on each kicker the first opening kickoff, and I had Gronk 20-1 to get at least two touchdowns, which is just
guys were all saying how all of their research indicated that there were going to be no kickoff returns. And I might have said something in the back room to the extent of, nice job doing your homework on that one, guys. So there were some confrontational moments on Sunday, and most of them were because of me being a jerk. But I think I had a few sarcastic remarks about, looks like you guys really did your homework on that one.
Because you and I discussed it on the pod that you guys are positioning yourself to, like, yeah, in terms of returns. And I said, well, 17 of the last 19 opening kickoffs were returned.
Yeah.
And so I got plus 250 on each guy. And look, the weather, the humidity, and also just the nerves. So look, there's a lot of factors. I mean, the guy took it from 7 yards deep, the Bucs on the opening kickoff. It was pretty funny.
And you know what? I wanted to highlight one other thing too. Because you're right. By the way, you're right. That upset us, by the way. He took that from so deep. It was ridiculous. But one thing I wanted to highlight was our handle on Sunday for the day was actually higher than it was for the Super Bowl Sunday Chiefs 49ers. Now, our overall handle number we posted was lower because we wrote about a million more in futures last year than this year because of the decreased tourism coming in all season long. But for the money we actually wrote during the week leading up to the Super Bowl and on the game, we handled more money than we did last year. And we were very happy with that. And that was despite our tickets at the counter going down 27% year over year. So what does that tell you? It tells you that more people are getting phone accounts and more people are betting on their phones. And that made me very happy, honestly.
Yeah, I do too, because the handle was down, but it was within reason. It was like, you know, the last 5 years have been around 130, 135 million. So it was all in that neighborhood. And so we know about the capacity restrictions. We know about the tourism restrictions. So to your book, at least, there was a limited on the futures all throughout the season, like the trickling in, but actual Sunday bets were higher, which is great, which is comforting.
We were very happy with that. If you told anybody on our team that we were going to actually have more money on the game itself than we did last year, and we would win what we won in spite of the Buccaneers winning, because we all knew we carried this liability into the game on the Buccaneers, we all would have been very pleased with our final numbers and very pleased with how everything went over the weekend. Very successful end of the football season.
All right, and I just want to put a bow on the Super Bowl, and I think we have to talk about it because I've received a bunch of questions, and I think, you know, everyone's in the learning phase of this betting space as we expand. I think we're at 20 states and one, not Washington, D.C., so 21 jurisdictions. The streaker story. Just to start out, you cannot bet that at any legal sports book in the U.S. So Westgate, anywhere in Nevada, like all the books, like you cannot bet those types of props. You can bet Gatorade in a few states, not Nevada, in some other states, but not the streaker thing.
No, and probably the main reason for that is because there's somebody out there that could know the answer. I'm not talking about the streaker necessarily, but look at the national anthem. There is someone out there that knows how long the national anthem is going to be. He's seen the rehearsals, or listened to the rehearsals, I should say. He knows how long it's going to be. There's a guy out there that works for the team that knows the color of the Gatorade. So I would imagine that the states that take that bet take very low limits on it. And in this case, if this guy is somehow actually telling the truth, there was a guy out there that knew he was going to streak onto the field at Super Bowl 55. So we don't take bets like that in Las Vegas. We don't take bets like that in Nevada. The Superbook is also open in Colorado, and we don't take bets like that in Colorado. It's Superbook Sports in Colorado. So I don't know if the story is true. I'm very skeptical of it, but I can tell you it definitely did not involve any bets in regulated markets like Nevada or Colorado. I know that for sure.
Yeah, I 100% will agree to that. But I will say, in terms of this story being true, I would say 5% chance. 5% chance.
You talked me up a little bit, man. You know, I was gonna disagree with you, but you made some compelling points about the ability to get down money if you're, let's say, innovative. So I'd still be a little less than 5%, but I'm not gonna completely dismiss it. Although I don't know that he'll actually get paid. Let's just pretend that he actually did all this stuff. Is he going to get paid in these unregulated markets now that he has decided to brag about it on social media? I don't know about that.
Right. So just so people understand, like, Bovada put out a release saying we're paying the people that we don't think had any connection to this gentleman. We're not paying some things in question. But there are other, let's just face it, there are bookies out there. The American Gaming put it out, $6.8 billion bet last year on the Super Bowl in the U.S. illegally and legally. This year they expected less. But in general, like, bookies have websites. You can bet on what's called a skin that, like, takes the lines from Bovada or whatever and copies them. And then you can just get down a large amount over, like, a wide range of network. Now, it has to be very sophisticated. This gentleman does not seem sophisticated because he's running his mouth about it. So that if he didn't run his mouth and the story leaked through a different avenue, like, let's say it just leaked through someone else who knew someone, like someone in the know, like, I broke it or something like that, then I would say it's more likely, like, you know, 40%, because I know people who've gotten down through syndicates, they're called, through like a web and going internationally and all this other stuff that you can get down. Just, you know, think about death by a million paper cuts, right? Like, you can just get down a lot. It's not like he was saying he walked in and put $100,000 over the counter at a reputable sports book. It doesn't work like that. You just get down and there's, like, you know, sharing and then chopping up and like a poker stack and things like that. But I just don't think it's that sophisticated, because I don't think this gentleman is that sophisticated because he's running his mouth. But
if he was sophisticated,
You can get down that much on something stupid like that, in theory.
Any very sophisticated bettor doesn't want you to know who he is. He's not going to be on social media bragging about his winnings. He's going to try to lay in the weeds and, at the very least, wait until he has the money in his hand before he starts bragging. I mean, a truly sophisticated bettor would never brag because they want to have the ability to do it again. But even a somewhat sophisticated guy, somewhat smart guy, would at least wait until he got paid before he took to social media to brag about everything. So that's another reason why I'm, we'll say, skeptical of the validity of this story.
Right. That's good. Good point on that. Just put a bow, Murray. Darren, the intern, did a great job tallying all the bonanza plays, especially with the halftime update. And I really was appreciative because I was thinking about firing a live or something like that. So I actually almost did the 15-1 prop on a Twitter, but I was like, nah, let it go. Yeah. I would have only put a couple hundred.
Oh yeah, great. Good job by the Prince of Props too. He had a good Super Bowl Sunday, and then I think I played Tampa Bay right in the show because I did. I actually put a couple bucks in my pocket on the Buccaneers on Sunday, so no complaints. And I will send. I'll put out a picture of some of the items I buy Caroline, nice. And I'll tag you and the intern. But you know the joke's kind of on you because I was going to buy Caroline a whole bunch of stuff anyway. And I already have, and I'm going to continue for the rest of her life. So not that it doesn't hurt me that bad. I was going to do it anyway. But congratulations to you.
Thank you. But I want to say this because Darren pointed out, he goes, the Breeze passing yards prop divisional weekend that lost by a half a yard was the difference in this year's bonanza. Now, I would have bet differently. Yeah, I would have done different. I would have at halftime, I may have done a Hail Mary play because I was tracking things at the half and things like that. But with that being said, it is fun to look back. It is interesting.
I'm gonna have the prince. He's also an admirer of Caroline. I'm gonna ask him to buy her something too. So either way, we'll all come out winners in this thing in the end.
Sounds good, my man. Well, it was a lot of fun. I know. You're a busy man on Zoom and meetings and more meetings and more meetings and a man and you got your own podcast and things like that. So I appreciate it. I know our viewers do, and you've built a little following with your Kicking Is for Losers. So thanks for all your hard work and your friendship and all the time you spent on the pod as well, my man.
Hey man, I'm not as busy as I was a week ago. Football season's over. We can finally start getting back to living our lives. So you let me know if you want to get together for a beer or to play golf. I'm actually available now for the first time since the summer.
Well, that's what I was just about to say. It's golf season officially, and I am off Saturday and Sunday. So last weekend, I had my first back-to-back off days since August. So I've had either
I can't
one,
wait, man. We'll be out. We'll be out on the
split
lake.
Split days, yeah.
Yes, sir. I'm the same way.
Let's do it. Bye-bye. Okay, well, thanks again, Murray. And congratulations on another successful year at behind the counter, but I get the confetti for the bonanza.
All right, bud. I'll talk to you soon.
Sounds to me like you guys a couple of bookies.
You using the whole fist talk?
Time now to welcome in an old friend of the podcast, Matthew Holt. And I say old because it feels like it's been forever, but it hasn't been. It's just we're so used to connecting and discussing UFC cards. Matthew, how are you?
I'm great, and I'm feeling a little old this time of year, at the Super Bowl, all the craziness around it, so many sports going on, and then March Madness right around the corner. What smack right in between those two? A UFC pay-per-view.
Yeah, we're used to seeing a UFC card overlapping the Super Bowl weekend. Obviously, that's pre-pandemic, a little different situation, but hey, it's Valentine's Day weekend, so we have Love is in the Air at the Apex here in Las Vegas. Let's talk about the main event. Welterweight champ Kamaru Usman against Gilbert Burns. Usman getting up there in terms of a money line, almost $3 here. I think it's too much. It's not too much of a – I'm sorry. I think Usman is too much, but it is interesting just to kind of monitor the market here. What do you make of everything?
So a couple of the sharper MMA bettors that I know, and I've been heavy Usman during the lead up to this, said to me, there's an interesting scenario here where Usman, withdrew from the fight the first time for reasons that are still a little unbeknownst to people. And some people have said it was because Gilbert Burns used to give him all kinds of problems in the gym as these two were former training partners. and that he feels like that Gilbert Burns may know his style too well. And he actually left that gym, went and trained at a different gym in preparation for this fight. I don't know that I agree with that. I think Gilbert Burns' path to victory comes very early in the fight. He has to land punches and hurt Kamaru Usman very early in this fight or spring a surprise submission somewhere in this fight. I don't actually think either of those two are very likely. I think the pacing of Kamaru Usman here is going to be way too much for Gilbert Burns. Gilbert Burns, and again, there's no easy path to a title shot in the UFC, but if there was ever a path that was tailor-made for a fighter, it was the path that Gilbert Burns took here, beating an old and fading Tyron Woodley, a 40-year-old plus Damian Maia, a Gunnar Nelson who was tailor-made for a jiu-jitsu ace like Gilbert Burns, Alexei Kinchenko. So at the end of the day, he got a path that was really conducive for him to not only win fights but look good in the process. And I think that this is going to be a completely different animal. Now, at 155 pounds, Gilbert Burns used to have some cardio issues. He blamed it on the difficult weight cuts. We haven't seen those cardio issues pop up at 170, but the one time he went five rounds at 170, it was versus Tyron Woodley, who may keep the slowest pace in all of MMA. In this fight, he's going to be fighting the exact opposite of Tyron Woodley, a guy that keeps one of the fastest paces in all of MMA. I think that pace is going to wear down Gilbert Burns in the later rounds. And I think that there's even a possibility, similar to the fight with Colby Covington, where Usman was able to get that late stoppage. He may be able to get a late stoppage here against Gilbert Burns due to damage or due to a late submission. And thus, I might actually look under in the main event, which has certainly not been the side during the pandemic in main events. But I think there might be a little bit of value under 4.5 plus 135. I haven't played it yet, but I certainly have a lean in that direction.
Well, four of his last fights have reached the fifth round in terms of Usman. But, you know, you talked about Burns getting a little steam. Like, there was talk of Masvidal having a chance in the last match when he replaced Burns after the COVID test. So I would tend to side with the favorite. I think the total is a little high for me to go under. It's mostly because I just stress about betting. Totals in UFC are very difficult in terms of the emotional toll it takes on one. I applaud you for always having a total play because it can be very stress inducing, so to speak. So you think like the path, I don't know, path to victory, stuff like that, but you think Usman could finish him early. Interesting. Okay. Let's go to the Barber Grasso fight. This one, obviously a little bit more reasonable money line in the neighborhood of Grasso minus 130. Barber was had a lot of hype, obviously, earlier. And, you know, she lost her last fight January last year, tore her ACL. What kind of version of her are you expecting here?
I think she's going to be okay physically. What I worry about here is at 22 years old, and Macy Barber, and her nickname is the future, and I think she might be the future because women's MMA, and we have some stars in it now with Shevchenko and Amanda Nunes. Well, what made Amanda Nunes a star? The ability to finish fights on the feet, you know, knocking out Ronda Rousey, knocking out Cyborg Santos. That was something we had never seen before in women's MMA and immediately propelled Amanda Nunes to superstardom. Macy Barber has that. 8 wins, 5 knockouts in her 8 wins, and she is a destructive striker. All 4 of her UFC wins come by way of finish and over some really tough girls, including Jillian Robertson. The problem is she's still really one-dimensional, and her gas tank probably isn't going to be there after a round or two, especially after tearing her ACL, which means she probably wasn't able to do the cardio work mm-hmm. in between her last fight and this fight that she probably needed to do to keep advancing. She's no longer at Rufus Sport. She's now down in Chicago training with Bilal Muhammad and some others down there. Look, I love Macy Barber. I think she's going to be amazing to watch for years. She's only 22 years old, but that's the problem here is that she's only 22 years old. She still doesn't have a defensive wrestling game. She still doesn't have a real offensive wrestling game either. Her skill set's still pretty limited, And if you go back to fights with J.J. Aldrich and Hannah Cyphers, two ladies who are no longer even with the UFC because of their inability to win fights, she was actually losing both of those fights, and especially J.J. Aldrich was giving her all kinds of problems, and then she landed that one big knee and the punches after to stop Aldrich. But she's still early in her developmental stage. And on the other side, Alexa Grasso is a young lady who came into the UFC with a ton of hype. They really wanted to promote her as they were starting to do more and more international cards, and they needed some Mexican stars as they were hosting cards in Mexico City. And here comes this young lady, Alexa Grasso. She's very pretty. She's very articulate. She has this awesome stand-up striking style. And she ran into some problems in the UFC, but she fought some killers. Former champion Carla Esparza, she fought to a very close majority decision loss. Tatiana Suarez, another extreme grappler. So the people that have given Alexa Grasso problems in the past have all been the most elite level grapplers in the UFC. Macy Barber really doesn't grapple at all. While there is the chance Barber lands that one big shot that changes the fight entirely, it's more likely that Alexa Grasso's more technical striking takes over a bit in this fight. And I actually like Alexa Grasso -130.
Interesting. I think the total is way too high in terms of the juice. It's over 2.5, minus like 250 and change, like 270 in some spots. I know you mentioned the cardio being a little bit of a question, but you also mentioned the knockouts in Barber's career and path. Like, feels like a nice value on the under 2.5 rounds, considering what we have in front of us here. Although Grasso, I know, typically goes to decision. I just feel the potential here with plus two, like 40 or so. That's just too juicy.
100% agree with you, Doug. And look, if you like Macy Barber, you should probably also parlay it with the under, because her path to victory throughout her entire career, and probably will be in this fight as well, is going to be by getting that big finish, landing that big shot, because I just don't think she's going to be able to stand there and get and engage in a technical kickboxing match with Alexa Grasso. So you're right. Look, and especially if you like the Macy Barber side, you should love the under 2.5 rounds at around plus 200.
Right. And for those may not have the luxury of doing parlays in the same fight, so correlated parlays or whatever you want to call it, some books allow it. Will Hill, I believe, does. But there are like win inside the distance, win by, you know, certain things, you know. So you can do that kind of a specific outcomes to kind of get better value on your play. It doesn't have to be necessarily just a parlay. Okay, so that covers the main and the co-main. Obviously, that the Grasso fight moved into the co-main after the positive test for Weissman. But I would I'm trying to look at the main card here as I search down opportunities. So I don't think you have anything more. Oh, you have. Sorry, let's just pause for a sec. So there's nothing on the main card that I'm trying to. You have the Marquez.
I think Julian Marquez. Yeah. Okay. Mackie Pitolo is the opener of the main card,
okay.
Right?
Okay. Yeah. Correct. I'm sorry. Okay, and let's finish off the main card. You have a play on the total for Marquez and Petillo.
Yeah, and look, this might be the best fight of nicknames that we've seen in the UFC in a very long time. Julian, the Cuban Missile Crisis Marquez against Mackie, Coconut Bombs Pitolo here, and Coconut Bombs, an appropriate nickname for Pitolo. The Hawaiian loves to get in there and bang. But while he is a banger, and I think there's been a lot of activity on the underdog here, he tends to get finished quite a bit himself. 7 losses, 5 of those losses coming by the way of finish. He got finished 2 fights ago against Darren Stewart. Really, Pitolo here, who's lost 3 of his 4 UFC fights, is going to be desperate for a win, and he's going to come out swinging like he always does. I think he's only still in the UFC because of that amazing knockout he had last year of Charles Byrd, but he followed it up with 2 more losses, including getting submitted by Darren Stewart in the first round of their fight. Julian Marquez is a really interesting guy here. This is a guy that came off Dana White Contender Series season 1 and really had the most, maybe the most famous head kick in all of Dana White Contender Series history, knocking out Phil Hawes with a devastating head kick. And the opponent they have in common, Darren Stewart. Darren Stewart submitted Mackie Pitolo. And on the other side, Julian Marquez submitted Darren Stewart. These are guys that tend not to go the distance. Julian Marquez, 7 wins, 7 finishes. Never went to the decision in a fight that he won. Pitolo also going to be slinging bombs. It's only 1.5 rounds, but at 185ers, these guys can both bang. We're going to go under 1.5 rounds, plus 145, thinking that in the 25-foot smaller octagon in the apex, it's going to force two guys that like to get after it anyway to get after it. And I expect one of them to finish the other. I really like Marquez to finish Pitolo, but Marquez is off a long layoff due to injury and inability to travel due to COVID. So there could be some ring rust there. And what happens in ring rust? Guys tend to get finished. They're not used to getting hit. We saw it with Conor McGregor against Dustin Poirier. So I think there's actually a good chance either guy could get finished early here. And I'm going to take under at the plus money, 145.
All right, I can get behind that. Let's go to the undercard. And, you know, we always joke about all tickets catching the same. So you have more plays on the undercard. Let's just rip through some of these. We'll start with Jillian Robinson. Why do you like her?
Oh, it's a little bit of a play on Jillian Robertson, but it's also a little bit of a play against Miranda Maverick. Miranda Maverick came in here with a lot of hype. She's really short, though. She's strong. She's short. She looks really athletic. But at 23 years old, she's also really inexperienced in terms of her ability to have an all-around diversified MMA game. And it's a little bit misleading when you look at her record because you go, okay, 1-0 in the UFC, and she got a knockout in her first fight of Liana Jojua. But in reality, that was a very, very close competitive round one in which Jojua suffered a huge cut on her nose, and the doctor stopped that fight due to the cut between rounds. Jojua said she was fine to continue. She wanted to continue. She didn't look to be hurt in that fight, yet the doctor stopped it between rounds due to the cut. Look, on Maverick's record, it looks like a knockout in the first round. It was actually a stoppage win, but she's only 5'3", and her greatest asset is her grappling. 5 submission wins, only 1 knockout win, going against Jillian Robertson, whose also best asset is her grappling. She's a couple years older at 25. She's been in the UFC a lot longer. She's fought a lot stiffer competition, including Tyler Santos, Macy Barber, Courtney Casey, Pollyanna Botello, who she beat. So, I mean, this is a young lady in Jillian Robertson who's come up, who fights at American Top Team, one of the best gyms there is, trains with some of the best fighters in the world. Both of these ladies have the exact same skill set, except Robertson's taller, has a longer reach, is going to be the bigger fighter, has more experience against top-level competition. Oh, yeah, and she's the underdog. Give me Jillian Robertson.
All right, so you grabbed a better number. It's come down a little bit, but still the dog in that fight. Two more plays to get there. Green by decision. Why are you, I don't want to say getting greedy, but why are you trying to thread the needle here when it's a pretty fair price, all things considered, on the money line?
I've been impressed with Jim Miller's ability to sustain damage. At 37 years old, look, his path to victory is very obvious. He either latches up a submission in the first round, and I think what his last 4 wins are all by first round submission for Jim Miller. And he hasn't had a lot of wins lately. I think he's 4-8 his last 12 fights, but all 4 of those wins are by first round submission. And when he doesn't get that first round submission, he tends to lose the fights, but he tends to lose them by decision. If we go back to his last fight against Vink from Hell Pichel in August of 2020, Pichel hit Jim Miller with some bombs. I mean, he really unloaded on him on the feet throughout the entirety of that fight. But Jim Miller, not only was he never like on the verge of being stopped, he seemed like he handled that damage really well. His loss to Scott Holtzman went to decision. In fact, the majority of his losses, some of them against really good strikers, Anthony Pettis, Francisco Trinaldo, Dustin Poirier, by the way, all by decision. At the end of the day, Jim Miller's really durable, but at 37 years old, he's proved that if he doesn't get that first round submission, his striking game just isn't up to the test. And Bobby Green, a really hard guy to submit. He hasn't been submitted since 2009, 12 years since Bobby Green has lost by submission. He's not getting submitted in this fight, and his striking's certainly going to start to take over. So rather than lay the minus 240 with Bobby Green, you can lay minus 115, minus 120 that Bobby Green wins by decision, which is vastly the most predictable outcome of this fight.
Yeah, I got my wires crossed. I apologize. It is a not reasonable money line. I thought it was, for some reason, I was brain cramped there. So yeah, minus 270, that would be the way to thread the needle. I've been burned a lot with fading Jim Miller. I know he's 37. I know all the reasons you mentioned. I'm going to have to think about that one a little more because Miller has been so impressive in that regard. And you're going to take a little bit of a flyer on Hernandez.
Yeah, you know what's really interesting is sometimes guys get a bunch of momentum, and we see this all the time where odds just are a little inflated. Whether Rodolfo Vieira should be the favorite or not, it's probably not in question in this fight. But the odds on both of these guys, or at least the public perception on both of these guys, has really changed. And Rodolfo Vieira has no striking game yet. He's 7-0. He's one of the greatest jiu-jitsu practitioners in all of the world. His nickname is the Black Belt Hunter for a reason. He loves submitting other Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belts. But at the end of the day, he's still a one-dimensional fighter. And what's really interesting to me is, you know, if we were to name like the five hottest middleweights on the planet right now, I think you and I would both agree that Kevin Holland is in that list. Shoot, Kevin Holland was like runner-up for Fighter of the Year in 2020, going 4-0 in 2020 with four really impressive wins in the middleweight division. Well, the win that started off that 4-0 campaign for Kevin Holland in 2020 was a fight against Anthony Hernandez. And if you go back and look at the odds in that fight, Anthony Hernandez was a minus 120 favorite over Kevin Holland. If Rodolfo Vieira and Kevin Holland fought right now, everybody would recognize that Kevin Holland would be the favorite. He's a top five ranked fighter. He's one of the best middleweights in the world. Holland would be a favorite over Vieira, and yet Hernandez was a favorite over Holland in his last fight. Granted, he lost that fight, but we didn't really get to see that fight play out because 30 seconds into the fight, Kevin Holland lands a huge flying knee, follows it up with a couple of hammer fists, and the fight gets stopped. So we don't know if that fight wouldn't have got, you know, stopped by a, I don't want to say a fluke knockout, but kind of a crazy out of nowhere knockout in 30 seconds in. Anthony Hernandez was supposed to win that fight against Kevin Holland. So you go from a favorite over Kevin Holland to a plus $3 favorite against the guy who, while maybe the best or one of the best in the world at his, you know, his particular craft, jiu-jitsu, certainly doesn't have an all-around game in the UFC. I just think if he can make it out of the first round, stuff a takedown or two, and get this fight into the second round with a guy who really doesn't have a stand-up game, Anthony Hernandez could get really live, really fast, at a really lucrative price.
All right. I like it. Good stuff as always. Matthew, I know our listeners appreciate it. We're going to figure out a schedule moving forward now that we are post football season, but it is always good to have the UFC. It's been such a rock solid part of our betting lives, especially last summer when things were so slow. Good to have your insight. And I know, like I said, everybody appreciates it.
Always a pleasure, Doug. Best of luck this weekend. Take care.
Money won is twice as sweet as money earned.
Okay, and thanks to Matthew Holt, and thanks to John Murray. What a season it was, and congratulations to the NFL. Every single game was played. Now, some rescheduling, and for the first time ever, the NFL had a regular season game on every day of the week, so that's Monday, Tuesday, you know, not in the same week, but throughout the course of the 17 weeks. But challenges were presented, and the NFL has met them, and, you know, same for the other sports. Obviously, some games in the NBA have been postponed, college hoops as well, but everyone's making do and getting by, and we are appreciative of that. Just as sports fans, not just the betting community, but as sports fans. So thanks to everyone for listening. We're going to figure out the schedule moving forward. We're obviously going to do plenty of basketball with NBA and college, just kind of figure out a way, a schedule that it all works. But appreciate everyone's loyalty and excitement about this podcast. And we're going to have some fun stuff moving forward. And obviously Daily Wager is Monday through Friday. So thanks to everyone. And we'll catch you back here next week.